Welcome to Planet Watch. I'm Rachel Ann Goodman, and I'm excited to be talking with Susan Hassel. She is an expert in communicating about climate change, something that the world needs greatly right now. You had a TED Talk, I believe in Montana, where you talked about why we're not communicating very well about a very important subject. Can you give me the 5-cent tour of A, why we're having so much trouble talking about something so important to us?
Yeah. I think one of the main reasons is that we have a huge partisan divide on the issue of climate change. It's really not a question about the science. It's a tribal divide and a question that's very, very much about politics and ideology. And I think that's probably at the heart of the communication challenge.
So how do we get around that?
Well, I think there are lots of ways around it because, you know, good communication is really a conversation more than a lecture. And I think if we had more of a conversation where we could connect on values that we all agree on, that we would probably make a lot more progress. So instead of starting out by talking about climate change when we know that that's something that's going to drive a wedge with certain audiences, we all want clean air and water. We all want to leave a better world for our children. We all want to increase economic growth and create good jobs. And so if we start there, everybody likes clean energy. Why don't we start right with the solutions? And, you know, eventually we get around to talking about human-induced climate change, but it doesn't have to be the first thing out of our mouths.
So we have different audiences, right, that might be hearing things. Scientists are not always used to communicating straight to the public because of their training. So tell me about, do they all need intermediaries or translators, or can we train scientists to speak directly to the public?
Well, I've actually spent a lot of the last 25 years doing just exactly that, training scientists to be more effective communicators, to speak without jargon, to avoid using words that mean different things to scientists than they do to the public, to let their humanity show. But scientists are not the best messengers for all audiences. They're good messengers for some audiences, but other people, their pastor might be a better messenger, or a business person. Right, the business case for action on climate change is tremendous. We know that climate change is bad for business, and we know that clean energy is good for business. There's a tremendous economic case to be made. We know we're spending big bucks right now on the impacts of climate change. We're spending hundreds of millions of dollars to pump water out of the streets of Miami at high tide. We're spending lots of taxpayer dollars to fight giant wildfires that are getting worse because of climate change. That takes money away from other things that we would rather be doing with that money. So climate change is costing us real money now. And on the other hand, clean energy, the solutions to climate change, are great for the economy. Tremendous job creation in solar and in wind. And so there's also a, you know, real race on right now globally for clean energy development. The revolution is underway and the race is on. And the question is, do we want to buy solar panels and wind turbines from China, or do we want to sell them to them? And right now they're ahead of us. So that's something that we can, again, all agree on and something that we want to do. So business leaders, economic leaders might be better messengers for some of those aspects, or engineers, than climate scientists.
What do you make of the people who are now in charge of the EPA and also you know, Secretary of State, and these various roles that are deeply, deeply ingrained in the fossil fuel industry? It's being shown all over the place that Pruitt and Tillerson are both, you know, they've been there their whole lives pretty much. How do we deal with the potential for misinformation coming out of the highest levels of government? And how do we counter that? Because these are supposedly people who are supposed to be speaking officially.
Well, it's certainly very distressing to have someone like Scott Pruitt, who, you know, spent his life very cozy with the fossil fuel industry, now running the EPA. I mean, he's sued EPA many times. But here's one way I think we can fight it. So Scott Pruitt said during his confirmation hearing that nobody really knows how big the human influence on climate is. Well, that was fake news. That was misinformation. And so my colleague, climate scientist Ben Santer, went on Late Night with Seth Meyers just two nights ago and did an excellent job of refuting that. He said, it's not true. We do know. Human activity is by far the dominant influence that is causing climate change. We study it. We use fingerprint analyses. He explained how it's done. And he said, you know, as a scientist who spent my entire career doing this, I can't just go in my office and keep my head down when I hear people saying things that aren't true. I've got to stand up and tell the truth. So I think that kind of refutation is important, and that's where scientists really can come in, scientists that are good communicators like Ben Santer.
Yeah, I got one for you, Susan. I've met Ben Santer and talked with him when I was working at NASA Ames. He came visiting from Livermore, I think is where he works, and he's got some real war stories to tell. And this leads into my question, actually, about how scientists can better communicate. I kind of think storytelling is something that everybody can relate to. And if scientists have great stories, if they could just get into telling them to regular folks more, that might go a long way. What do you think of that?
Well, absolutely. It's one of the things I teach when I teach scientists how to communicate more effectively. We practice storytelling in these workshops because they do have a great story to tell about their own lives and their own careers, about the work that they do. You know, Ben tells the story of how we understand the human influence on climate, how we know, because it's like a fingerprint, that the lower atmosphere gets warmer, but the upper atmosphere, the stratosphere, actually gets cooler. And that is evidence, it's a fingerprint, that the warming is caused by the buildup of heat-trapping gases from human activities and not by something natural like the sun. So Ben's a great storyteller, Michael Mann is another great storyteller, and so we do have some scientists who are doing a much better job of telling these stories. Now, there are other good storytellers. Some of them are people of faith. Some of them are city planners or coastal planners or people who work in energy and electric utilities. And they're dealing with these kinds of things. They have stories to tell. People in the health, public health arena have stories to tell about how climate change is affecting our health now and how it will affect it more in the future and what we can do about it.
I have an interesting angle on this, and I've read a lot of George Lakoff, and he talks about confirmation bias and emotional word choices. What kind of words are most effective in cutting through? What is a natural human instinct, I think, is to not want to hear that we're in deep trouble. How do you get around those kinds of blockades that our brain will put up regardless of how much we want to save ourselves?
Yeah. Well, I'm also a big believer in the notion that words matter and that we have to choose them very carefully because words have emotional content. And so, for example, I sometimes hear people say the world's warming and we're to blame. And I cringe. I never use the word blame because blame is a very negative word. We didn't do it on purpose. I say the world is warming and we're responsible because responsibility is a good thing. That's the kind of people we are. We take responsibility for our actions and we can do something about it. So that's just one simple example. I also sometimes hear scientists say, oh, the world is warming, it's going to warm a lot more, and it's inevitable. And I hate that word, inevitable, because you know what? The future lies in our hands. The choice is ours. Whether we get a little more warming or a lot more warming depends totally on what our missions are. So it's not inevitable. Sure, a certain amount is in the pipeline. But really, whether things turn out well or badly is in our hands. So that's important. Another example, I think, on word choice is that it's very important, and George Lakoff says this, not to buy into the framing of your opponents. So people who are against regulation are big talking about regulation. Instead of using that word, I say protection, because those regulations are there to protect us, to protect our health, to protect our future. So there's a lot of places where choosing the right word is very important, and I've spent a lot of my career talking and writing about that, and I mention it quite a bit in my TED Talk, and I've published articles about it as well.
Another angle on that, by the way, is talking about sort of the opposite of the negative connotation of regulation, i.e. money down the drain for these onerous regulations. How about the money to be made big time with the solutions to these problems? You know, even the most so-called conservative people can relate to money to be made. And, you know, I actually was kind of wondering, okay, all this climate communication stuff, where are we, you know, if those in power don't get it yet? Part of my answer is many, many, many millions of people like this new course that Ramanathan is talking about, everybody get involved in. But the message about the money, so it's not regulation, it's money making. How about that as sort of a meme or a theme?
Yeah. Well, certainly the money to be made in solutions to climate change and clean energy is a very important thing to talk about. And I think with some audiences, I skip right over the problem of climate change and I go straight to solutions, because the solutions are a place where everybody agrees. Everyone wants the job creation. Everyone wants the economic growth and the technological development. Everyone wants to lead the world. And so that's what clean energy can be for us if we make that choice. Also, things that we do to adapt, to make ourselves more resilient, also save us money if we do them proactively in advance, rather than wait for the disaster to happen and then have to be reactive. So in both mitigation, that is reducing emissions to reduce future climate change, and adaptation, changes we can make to become more resilient to climate change, there is money to be made. And let's not leave that money on the table.
We have just a little bit more time, but I wanted to ask you, you know, in the era of social media where people's opinions can concentrate in little bubbles and people don't want to talk across ideological lines, how do you suggest everyday people engage one another in this dialogue? People who are concerned, perhaps engaging people who may not vote or think like them, but still want to survive into the future and want their grandkids to live a nice life.
So this is very important. I think in person is the best way to have that conversation, and to have it be a conversation rather than a lecture. Find out where you agree. Start with the places that you agree. And, you know, usually everybody wants to leave a better world for their kids, right? Everybody wants good, healthy economic growth. Start there and then have a conversation. Try and understand what they care about and talk about it from that point of view. We do need to have this conversation. There's really a spiral of silence around climate change. People don't talk about it as much as they should. And partly it's because they're afraid that other people don't agree with them. We need to get over that, and we need to have the conversation. We also need to encourage that conversation to take place much more in the media, because the media may not tell you what to think, but they tell you what to think about. And that, it's not climate change, because you don't see enough stories about climate change. So we need the media to be doing a better job of not only telling the climate change story, but connecting the dots between things that are happening, extreme weather events, for example, extreme heat waves, heavy downpours, the increase in fire season that I mentioned, rising sea levels and coastal flooding, connecting the dots between those things and climate change and helping people to understand the interaction between them. So I think there's a lot we can do to increase people's understanding and awareness, and we have to move forward, and we have to move forward together. This problem is too big to solve voluntarily one person at a time. We need economy-wide change. People intuitively know that just by changing their own light bulbs, that's not going to be enough. Collective action is what's needed. So forward together.
Thank you so much. This has been great. And here on Planet Watch, we're doing our part to communicate about this very important issue, and you've just helped us frame it even better as we go forward. So thank you for your time, Susan Hessel.
Thanks, Susan.
You're very welcome.